This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 18th of November, 1953. The title of this lecture is Waste a Machine. This tape is 47 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
This is the second period this afternoon. This afternoon I'm going to give you the integration of these two things, geographical location and positioning, positive, negative positioning, in auditing terms. Now, every time you try to position somebody, you run into the fact they may start thinking or start being where they are. They might start being where they think they are. You get that. You ask somebody, now are you in Paris? And he said, yep. You say, are you in South America? And you say, yep. Are you at the North Pole? Well, yep. Now, right there, without going into the impossible and the incredible and the dangerous methods of relocating him, unless the case is very far down, the case is real far down, you've got to go much further than this. I mean, you've got to go into the impossible and the incredible and the dangerous to shake them loose. They're not in shape where they can run anything like or understand what you're talking about. But this is merely the case that doesn't understand what the devil you're talking about, and it's pretty foggy and gropes around and so forth. In any case, present here, you would follow into this kind of a position. You would say, now let's waste a machine that sends you someplace. That's actually, you think, maybe step four. No, it's not. That's step two. This guy is not going to exteriorize well until he can be located well. Exteriorization, inability to, has immediately under it this heading, not located. That's all the reason there is to why a person can't exteriorize. Actually, they're not located. Their abilities are somewhere else. See? Simple. Everything they know or can do or can feel, all these things are elsewhere. And every time you ask these people to get into locations of this or that, or where are they not, they either get occluded, or the mock-up disappears, or they disappear, or the body unmocks, or everything gets very solid, or they suddenly fix. In one case, he has to disappear, and he's probably never at any moment felt more solid than just at that instant when I asked him to be 3 feet back of his head, and he all of a sudden fixed. All of this comes under the heading of, and we just use the word machinery in lieu of postulates and facsimiles. We use the word machinery because they very happily mock all this up in terms of a machine, but their mothers show up and their fathers show up and so forth, because these are machines too. They're facsimile machines. They're biological machines, and they're all basically postulate machines. That's the most basic machine there is, you see, is a postulate machine. But you just don't walk into a case and say, all right, clip out all the postulates now, which make you forget about all your automatic machinery. Now clip out all the postulates that hide all your automatic machinery. Now clip out all the postulates that protect all your automatic machinery. Now clip out all the postulates that keep your automatic machinery from appearing. Now clip out all the postulates that made your automatic machinery in the first place and say, all right, you're clear, $5, next case. You don't do that. People like to drag it out longer. You want to know what this stuff is up here in the wall? This mess is up here in the wall. It's postulate. That's no reason it isn't real. All the realest thing there is postulate. Don't go into reverse on this and say, well, the most unreal thing there is about it can be real because I just thought so. You'll say that every once in a while. Well, I just think so, so therefore it isn't real. Boy, that person is an inverted one. See, because he thinks so, it isn't so. The only reason anything ever got so is because he thought so. See what great simplicity we have here. All right. Let's take this thing very logically, illogical basis, which is. It's merely geographical location. Now, geographical location depends upon the fact that we have to assume that there are barriers. So any machine that makes barriers is the most senior machine there is, because that has to precede the machine which unmakes barriers. So you have machines that mock up barriers and machines that unmock barriers.
as your two fundamental machines. Now, there are various other machines which stem from these. There are machines that make barriers disappear by covering them with blackness. And there are machines which fight other barriers by covering other barriers with blackness. And they cancel other barriers by making them intolerably full of effort. Now, these machines are just basically these two machines. One, the machine that makes barriers, and the machine that unmakes barriers. See, viewpoint of dimension, the second you put out 8 anchor points, you put out actually, in essence, 8 barriers. And you've got space if you put out 8 barriers. You haven't got any space if you put out 8 barriers. Space doesn't exist, but you do. No reason to be tangled up about this. It's just, it doesn't exist, that's all. So don't think that you can go on agreeing with the meshed universe forever and have an excellent case. The reason why you can't do this is because the meshed universe is composed entirely of barriers. You've just asked the fellow to go on agreeing with barriers forever. And it's an automatic machine that you're validating. So you keep punching this machine and punching it and punching it and punching it. And all of a sudden the barriers get thin and they shiver and the rooms start going out of plumb. And the Walt Whitman Hotel, which is one of the favorite things they're using up at 726, boy, it took a beating during the last 6 weeks. It all of a sudden is out of plumb. It grows in height. Well, these things, then nothing's supposed to happen that way. You ask a guy to hold on to the back corners of the room and not think, that's real good. If you ask him to hold on to the back corners of the room and think, that's real bad. What's the difference between these two? You ask him, well, just hold on to the back corners of the room and just relax. In other words, let the machine called George do it. He's out of contact with that machine anyhow. And he doesn't think it's all right. But now if he holds on to the two back corners of the room and thinks, he starts energizing all kinds of machinery. And so this machinery goes into action on the machinery which he's using to mock up the meshed universe. It's very funny about these machines. One day not too long ago, I ate a smelt that probably did a little bit when it came from the butcher. It made me a little bit sick at my stomach just for a while, until I went out walking around, and I located the machine that makes smelts. Very simple, and kicked hell out of it. The smelt disappeared. Very simple. Wasn't anything to this, but of course the most direct thing to do was simply to unmock the smelt. The next most simple thing to do is, of course, not eat smelt. The next most simple thing to do before that is not have a stomach or a body which needs anything like energy to motivate it. Simple. All right, now you get no randomities. Huh? Simple. Okay, so let's look over the problem of automaticity and geographical locale. And we find out there's no geographical locale unless some automaticity's been set up in the first place. As long as a fellow simply knows he is, he also knows where he is. If he just knows he is, then he knows where he is. But boy, a lot of people have come down the line on validation of automaticity to a point where they don't know where they are. See, they don't know where they are. The reason they don't know is very simple. It's because the machinery is superior to them. And the machinery tells them they have to have a location. So if the machinery tells them they have to have a location, then where they are has to be located for them by things which they create. But that's an automatic... You know, one of the weird double terminal buttons that you can run is the least admired thing I know of in the whole universe is just this one. That's why it's so persistent. Is setting up something so it will continue to run with no attention. You mock up yourself doing that in 4 positions, and you'll find out it gets mighty hectic and erratic because you walked into the center of automaticity. Real erratic, such mock-ups get very often. All right. What's the process then? Well, you play step 1 against step 2. You could actually just keep doing this step 1 against step 2 until the person gets cleared. Step 1 is, where are you with relationship to the barriers? And when we get to two, he didn't exteriorize easily and well on one, so we've got to two, we merely assume. And we remember, we do all these things with the person exteriorized, too. It isn't just to get him out. That isn't our emphasis. When we get to step two, we find out that we have located him by things which he had a hand in creating. See that? We locate him. He just feels fine about it. And then we're immediately into the echelon that he has exited and is located in. He's now located in space, which he has a hand in creating. The essence of simplicity. So at step one, we find out that he is not located in the space which he has created. In step two, while we start to make it unnecessary to be so dependent upon this space which he himself created and now thinks that somebody else is creating. See? So that's step one and step two, the values of. Actually, two is a much higher echelon step than one. But while the person is still inside, you find you have to go all the way down these steps to find some place to start unmarking this maze, this mirror maze, which he's got fixed up and which he's lost control of. Now, lost control would be the one thing that you can say is in general and in common with all automaticity. He hasn't any control. It's where he doesn't have control that something is automatic. For instance, PC this morning did a couple of shivers and threw a little bit to make her make a machine which would knock her out of control. Well, of course, that's fun, too. So somewhere back on the track, we have a machine that knocks somebody out of control. That's the basic machine. But later on, PC, earlier lives and that sort of thing, starts getting hit by freight engines and running through the perils of Pauline in general. And this earlier machinery gets a lot of facsimiles piled up on it. And these are all barriers. And you understand that running a facsimile is validation of a barrier. People start validating the barrier called the facsimile to a point where that energy becomes, if anything, more real than messed energy. And that's why, after, at the most, a few hundred hours of auditing, Dianetic processing starts to cave in. You see why that is? It's very simple. It's just if you validate the barrier of the engram. If you validate barriers which contain unconsciousness, you can only do this for a few hundred hours, and then all of a sudden this starts to become a new reality because you've set up an auditing machine, which has as its prime purpose the correction of barriers. And the correction of barriers, of course, can only take place when you say, I've got barriers. And this can only take place when you say, I have no responsibility for the barriers, which is to say, I didn't make them. When you take complete full responsibility, it is the willingness to mock or unmock barriers at will. Any barrier, no matter what it is. Now, people go around all the time with mental blocks. They can't think of this, they can't think of that, they can't remember this, and they can't do this, and they wouldn't dare get on a stage and do something because, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All politeness, manners, social culture is based upon validating series of invisible blocks. So these invisible barriers, these blocks, barriers, same thing, these invisible barriers themselves becoming validated get more and more real, and start to supplant the reality of the situation. You get somebody being very polite while the house is burning down. You see, he's rushed in to pick up the baby, but he brushed by somebody suddenly on the stairs and knocked them a little bit, you see, and he stops to apologize and excuse himself before he goes on and rescues the baby. Oh, yes, that's more important than rescuing the baby. And so things go out of balance. By the way, as I talk about this sort of thing, I'm kidding it merely because it doesn't deserve anything more than a little smile or a joke or a laugh. But I'm not trying to tell you that all this is real bad. As a matter of fact, it's a wonderful way to get randomity. It's real good. But you carry it too far and then say, I've forgotten how I'm doing it. And then you've got other people around with whom you're in constant communication who think it's just wonderful that you started doing that out that way, because he knows the only change you can put on yourself, you put there yourself. All I'm trying to do is tell you, now look, if you throw away a few hundred pounds of these chains, why, you'll be lighter. That's all. It's a super simplicity. Now, a failure to exteriorize is a validation of a barrier called a body. You know, you've said it's there, it's there, it's there. After a person passes a certain point in this, all of a sudden it's not there anymore, see? That's automaticity for you. As soon as you've completely decided, and as soon as you're completely assured that the automaticity which you set up is itself utterly dependable, from that moment on it deteriorates in dependability. So you set this body up and you get it beautifully trained, and it's just like getting all dressed. Training is something like getting all dressed for the show with no show. You get to a point of where it's all automatic, and after that you don't put on a performance. That's quite a button, by the way. Quite a button to run. As little kids, you're always doing this. You say, well, gee, I could be Buck Rogers dead easy if I just had a space helmet and a space gun. And you needed the equipment. In other words, having this before moving this. That's just reversing it. You've got to have moving this. And out of moving this comes having this. And if you haven't got enough sense, Alexander had enough sense. One part of his campaigns way back there in the 4th century before Christ, he made his troops burn their baggage. Then he didn't have much sense after that, and he forgot to. He got less and less motion. Believe me, he got less and less motion until they finally all said, we want to go home. And they went home. And there went the end of the world conquest. Why? Well, when having this has to come before doing this, in each and every case, you get less and less having this, really. Really. Because what comes before having this is doing this. The postulate of motion exists before the particle is moving. And you've gotten all dressed up with a body, and you have a recognized identity, and everything is swell, but no play. This is silly, see? Now, if a fellow's buried this fact away from himself, he's saying, I'm having no fun. Of course he's having no fun, because he forgot what show he was supposed to be in. Very similar. He finds himself going to the office every morning and sitting down at the office, or going through the same motions every day, and because he found it was rather dull to just flip from place to place and be in this place and be in that place and look at this and look at that. He finally conceived it was dull, or he let himself be talked into the fact that he conceived it was dull or something of this sort. And as he did this, he said, now, the best thing to do is give myself some limitation of motion. The best way to limit motion is to be carried various places by something which is itself destructible. Now he forgets this, and he starts walking up and down the street with a body. You see, he takes the body here and he takes the body there, and then after a while the body's taking him there and the body's taking him elsewhere. And you ask him to be 3 feet back of it, and he sits there waiting for the body to move him out of the back of his head. You actually can exteriorize somebody once in a while by saying, all right, now have the body put you out back of your head. I was exteriorizing a case like this not too long ago. Mind if I tell it? And I exteriorized the case not too long ago and was getting along fine and used that technique. Now have the body put you behind the head, and I'll put you back in your head, and I'll put you behind your head, and so on. A lot of effort on this case. And all of a sudden, he said to me, he says, my body isn't doing it. He was real, real determined about this. And the determination was great certainty. Well, his body wasn't doing it. And after that, well, with a little more work with effort and so on, I exteriorized. But after... the darnest thing around. After he was well exteriorized and so forth, why, he was sitting back of his head very nicely, and he was fine. He reached up like this with his hand, and all of a sudden goes, crunch! He tried to catch himself with his own hand. And he saw his hand closing on him as a thetan. Now that gives you some idea about the validation of the body to a point where the piece of machinery, you see, is supposed to work on an automatic basis and goes on a different circuit. But that is only a very humorous part of the same thing. This happens quite ordinarily in theta clearing. The body has done so much for somebody, and it is so much a piece of automaticity, that he has this problem It must move him out. And then when it can no longer do anything for him, then the auditor somehow or other must move him out. There isn't any reason why he really just can't be out beyond this. He set up this machinery. Well, it's set up to run that way, and so it's got to be undone the same way it's done. You undo magic by running vaguely, but not in the time sense, but you've got to run somewhere close to a parallel of how it was done. And you just undo it, just backwards. So now he's got to have somebody else moving around, or something else moving around, which is characteristic of an automatic society. He has an auditor, and the auditor moving around. Because when a fellow sets himself up as an auditing machine, that is really something. And if you want to get some line charges out of some of these people present, just have them run on the second step, auditing machines. And if somebody's been self-auditing a lot, have him run a self-auditing machine. Believe me, he's got one. It's his body. And you wonder why he doesn't get out of it. Well, he's automatically auditing himself. Now, here's this darn machine that moves him into various places. He wants to be told to go. So he long ago has set up a machine which will send him places where he thinks of. You know, he thinks of Paris, and the machine sends him to Paris. In other words, he sets up a relay that puts him in Paris when he thinks of Paris, because he has the idea of having to be moved. There's no reason why he can't just say Paris. He knows if he wants to be in Paris, and he's in Paris. That's all there is to that. So you just clip out the machine. Otherwise, it'll continue to baffle you on step one. Where do you think you're not? You get that now. Where do you think you're not? And the fellow says, in Paris? Yes. This starts to get very mysterious to him, too. It gets peculiar to him after a while. He doesn't realize the machine's in action. Now you're going to tell some preclair to unmock something, and it'll promptly disappear. And nobody will be more surprised than the preclair. The thought to make something disappear on his part, when given to him by the auditor and translated into his energy, triggers his machine, and away it goes. Now, one of the reasons a person wants to be so darn secret about his machinery and his equipment and what he's really doing and why he's hiding even from himself and from a body and from everything else is because you could actually walk around and trigger people's automaticities. You wanted to look hard enough and search hard enough and tune your wave bands up delicately enough. If you were good enough, you'd simply be able to trigger their automaticities. They run like a bunch of puppets on a string when you do this. You can walk down the street. You can sail down the street and just above people's heads or something like that, and every once in a while shift your beam around till you find it bong, you see, and set somebody's automaticity up that tips their hat. And they're right out in the empty air, will tip their hat. Most surprised preclear.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
When I was first researching this, I should give you a little research kit, haven't I? I found out that they were using ridges instead of moving their arms. People were using ridges to move their arms. People have two or three different kinds of systems to handle the body. And in one of these cases of handling ridges, I told this person to simply put a beam. They were outside and in front of themselves. So I said, well, that's, by the way, a difficult position to get most preclairs in. When they're real good off, well, they go into it easily. But a lot of them have assumption and restimulation. They've got an old theta body right in front of their face, and it has a vacuum in it. And other people occupy this space all the time out in front of you, you see, so you can think of it as other people's space. Well, anyway, this girl beamed this thing on her shoulder and almost dislocated her right arm. So I said, well, a little more caution. Put some energy into the little ridge, which is on the left shoulder. And she put some energy into it, and the arm flew up again. So I now selectively start beaming these various ridges on these arms. And, of course, the motion was very random and very hectic for a short time, but she was able to sort out the exact ridges which she energized in order to lift teacups, in order to do this, in order to do that. And this preclear got more fascinated. In fact, we could see them out in front of their body, you know, sitting there saying, gee, that's interesting, and punching another ridge. Gee, that's interesting, and punching another ridge. Seeing what happened to the arm. Examining their own anatomy just as though they hadn't set it up. Of course, as she'd done this for a little while, got back into her body again, she fully expected, having blown up a lot of these ridges, that the body couldn't do this, so she had to concentrate for a very short time in order to lift a teacup. Split second. It's very funny. We found out afterwards this ridge was so darn prominent and so on, that in washing dishes she very often broke cups. Fascinating. She very often broke cups. She had a ridge that lifted a teacup delicately and gently while she conversed elsewise. Blew it up and she stopped breaking teacups. Okay. The gain on this is apparently a negative gain, meaning you have less, but actually have more. So these two systems interlock. I told you this morning how to run out a machine. One of the first things you have to do is find out what kind of a machine are you looking at. You tell the person to be here and be there, and you all of a sudden find that he's going automatically or that he's just fixed. He's going no place. He can't get out of his head. Well, that's attention to disperse, attention to fixed. It's being done on an automatic principle. What is he doing? You ask him to put his attention on space, and it collapses on the object in the center of the space. Or his attention on the space, and it collapses immediately in front of the object. See? What's he doing? Or you ask him to put his attention on the space on either side of an object, and all of a sudden the object disappears. What are you basically dealing with those three tests? Now, what are the tests? The test, very simple, is now put your attention on the object. Okay, now put your attention on the spaces on either side of the object. Now put some emotion in those two spaces on either side of the object. That really puts his attention on it. And he says, I don't know, every time I try to do that, the object becomes brighter, or the object splits in half, or the object gets smaller, or my attention seems to snap in just beyond the object. This is merely a symptom of how much space he's able to spread his attention over. That's all it's a symptom of. That means he's gotten barriers to the point where he hasn't anything else but barriers. He hasn't got any space between barriers anymore. He's got lots of barriers and nothing between the barriers. Now, you want to give him something between the barriers. The best way to do that is to make it possible for him to handle barriers. All right, so we put his attention on either side of it, find out what he does. And you will just have to guess what the machine is. That's all. Don't ask him. He won't look at it. That's the one thing he's trained not to do. He also, with great surprise, his attention snaps together. Just see, this is a very simple thing you're doing. His attention snaps together on the far side of the object. And you say, well, now let's run a machine. Let's waste a machine that concentrates for you. He does that very happily, but he's very puzzled as to how you possibly guessed this. Concentrates, be damned. You're just looking at a super fixed attention, which is so super fixed it doesn't even hit the object. It sort of squeezes the object in and locks on the other side of it, or locks on the near side of it. Now, let's get a machine. Now, this other fellow, you say, look at the object. He doesn't. Every time he looks at the object, his attention flies on either side of it. What kind of a machine is that? You tell me.
No concentration machine.
That's right, a machine which keeps him from concentrating. But that's rather condemnatory. A machine which makes it possible for you not to concentrate is the polite way to, you know, tell it. And that's it. A machine that makes it possible for you not to concentrate all the time. Because that's his automaticity. That's real cute, see? He can run this machine over here and he doesn't have to look at it. So he gets the machine set up, that fixes it up so that some attention will go on to this machine. He doesn't have to look at it, and he's got it all rigged up so he doesn't have to look at anything. Phew. All of a sudden, why, that's what happens. But he tells you, all right, you say, put your attention on the space on either side of the object. What happens? The object disappears. What's he got? What's he got? Puts his attention on either side of the object, and the object disappears. What's he got? Well, that's basically true. Well, what would you say he had? That's right. See, it's simpler than this. Much simpler. It's something that unmocks things. And a person like this feels that he has to look solidly and hard at nest and keep his attention on it very carefully or it'll disappear. And he sort of got the feeling like he's got one finger in one corner of the room and one finger in the other corner of the room. And if he suddenly released these fingers, the whole nest universe would collapse. It won't. So he's got this, and mist disappears when he takes his attention off of it. He wears glasses in order to see mist. Or he has corneas so he won't have to see mist. He's trying to handle a machine that is handling something by handling it with another machine. He's got a machine starting something, another machine stopping something. He always has this. Anything you can say about any machinery, he's always got a machine doing the opposite someplace. It'll show up sooner or later. So, all right, we have any one of these machines. Now, we tell him to put his attention on the object, and he says, yes. Yeah. All right. Well, does your attention snap in when you put it on either side of the object? Does it snap in on the object? No. Well, put it on the object. Does it slide out any? No. Does it converge in front of it? No. What are you trying to do? He'll say, it converges behind you? No, it's just the object. So forth. What's the matter with him? No. He's just real satisfied with that missed universe machine he's got. He wouldn't disturb it for worlds. You know, he's all very complacent about the whole thing. Of course, he doesn't have much motion or action. See? In other words, he isn't having any trouble with attention, he thinks. All he can see is the messed universe. Remember that. Now, don't come around saying to somebody after he gets out of his body that it's dull. Of course it's dull. The only set of barriers he has are messed universe barriers. He can't interpose or eradicate barriers at will. And if he can't do that, he can't pick up any randomity anyplace. You see that? He's satisfied with a barrier. In other words, he's got an automaticity in perfect balance. But yet, that would be a real good homo sap. Kind of bored, but real good homo sap. And that would be so high above normal, or above average in the society, that you could hardly reach it with a rocket plane.
Well, had the nuclear opposite.
There is no right one. Of course. The next thing you would ask that fellow is say, all right. Now, as you sit there, you see if you can't, there's a bolt there on the side of that machine. Now, see if you can see the machine without the bolt being there. Gradient scale, see? You say, yeah. All right, now see if you can see the machine without the upper part of it there, being there. Just make it go thin. See if you can get that a little bit thin, the upper part of the thing. Now let's see if you can make it thicker. Now make it thinner, now make it thicker, now make it thinner, now make it thicker. Thinner, thicker, thinner, thicker, and all of a sudden, pang! He has control of the thing. He can say it isn't there and it's not there. He can say it's there and it's there. As soon as he's control of this type of an operation, he can mock and unmock a messed universe barrier at will, at least for himself. And you do this with walls, and you do this with people, and you do this with other things, and then you can do it with his own body. Or you can start out with his own body first. Now get your nose not being there. Unmock your own nose. See? You can unmock the whole body and just leave the preclear sitting there 2 feet above the chair. There's the essence of the situation. Because he's depending on this to locate him so thoroughly that his whole track is jammed. You see how that is? This person's very satisfied with this. That's just fine. That tells him where he is. He shouldn't need this to tell him anything about where he is. He should be able to see it or unsee it at will. Right?
What's the scoop when your auditor asks you to unlock it and nothing happens and a split second later you forget that he asked you and then unlock?
I would say this was just difficulty in shifting attention. I tell you what, I did somebody that had this lag happening a very short time ago, this little lag. He kept marking on these little lags. Now, get a machine that checks it over and makes sure it's all safe before you do it. Does that hit you?
Yeah.
Okay. That's an automatic checking machine. A little time lag in it. Well, now, there's a tremendous variety out of these simplicities, where it's just, you just hit it on the button, or to hit it way off the button. Waste any kind of a machine. Now, what ways do you use doing this? First is you can make the pre-clear do it, and then not do it, and do it and not do it until he's thoroughly doing this at will. Got that? That's the first step always. In other words, you just make him do it instead of the machine do it. Machine will do this sooner or later. By the way, he's got a machine that sets this up. This tells you that sooner or later, that damn machine is going to stop setting it up for him. You get that? He's very satisfied with the way that sits there. Well, that's just fine. What childish dependency. Sooner or later, why, he's going to start looking around when he gets to be a few years older or something like that, and he's going to say, what wall? He doesn't garnish this in any way. He doesn't. It's just there. This is the practical, matter-of-fact person. As he goes along in life, the whole universe starts to slide out from underneath him because he's just stopped leaning on it. He's just lying down completely. It tells him what to eat and what to wear and where to go and what to do. It evaluates for him. Now, evaluation is this. Evaluation, definition of evaluation, is changing position in space. That's basically evaluation. See? If something can change a person's position in space, then that person, depends on the intention, but that person, of course, can then evaluate for the individual. You don't get this very much. An auditor changes face processing. An auditor says, be here, be there, be someplace else, and so forth. For the first few minutes after the session, because the preacher has been very concentrated on the session, the auditor's word carries a lot of weight with him. It fades right away. Because, of course, the intention behind it is simply to return self-determinism, not to interrupt it. So you've got a guy who's got another postulate in the road of the natural consequence of this. Well, why do you think Mama evaluates for the body? The body was carried around in a womb all over the place by Mama, then packed all over the place as an infant by Mama, and then Mama finally says, well, I remember when you were a little girl, such and such happened, and so happened, and it didn't happen at all, by the way, and you were so and so, and I was so and so, and you said so and so, and you used to have curls until you were 9. And the fellow says, yes, Mama. Yes, Mama. Yes, Mama. His memory is 1,000 times better than his mother. You process some preclear. You run through birth. You find out there's nitrous oxide used in birth and so forth. Preclear goes home. Mama says, why, there wasn't any anesthetic used at all in birth. I just lay there and screamed. And they didn't pay any attention to me. And the preclear comes back to you and says, well, you couldn't have run birth. It must have been a delusion as far as I was concerned, you see, because you say, did you talk to your mother about this? He said, yes. Well, you're not in a position to evaluate for him the way Mama can. Because Mama's carried him around all over the shop. You see that? This stuff is saying, here you are, there you are, there you're someplace else, now you're someplace else, now you're someplace else, now you're someplace else. All the time, see? 100% evaluation. Boy, after a while, this stuff becomes thick, heavy. You don't have to make any effort at all to keep from seeing through it. As a matter of fact, once in a while you'd be a little tired. The way it ought to be is once in a while you're a little tired, something like that, you have trouble watching a television set. Because you're thoughtless about the whole thing. In other words, you don't have any real intention. Just go over and sit on the television stage and watch the actual play rather than look at it coming through the set. Just rack around until you've got the actual television stage. Look at it. It's in color. No flicker. No interference. Much better. And then you go a further stage than that. If you sit there, and you're bound and determined to sit there in your own home and watch a television set, which is the purpose that you're doing, why, you're liable to, if you're a little bit tired, not watching quite what you're doing, simply actually watch the television, not the screen. In other words, look at the cathode ray emanation point. Foot or two back of the front screen, and you watch this terrifically concentrated tiny scanner. There's a picture back there. I mean, it looks just as good as any other place. And by the way, you have other troubles with television. If you get too concentrated on the screen itself, you'll start wiping it. If you got any power? I mean, that is messed wise. I mean, you can set up enough vibration in the thing to upset it, or you can turn the screen on and off after it's been turned off. That is to say, you can make it glow. Get in the dark room and make it glow, and then go faint and glow and go faint. Actually, glow and go faint. Somebody else comes along, you know, and sees the thing, and there's the television set lighting up and going dark again. This is very upsetting to people. Well, it's not much of a trick if you watch a lot of television because you're fixed on that wavelength. Easy, huh? But as long as this stuff is all there is evaluating for you, you, of course, get completely messed values across the boards, then you've limited your ability to this limit, that anything you use or believe in has to be constructed by the same methodology that constructed this. That, in essence, is what's wrong with the engineer. See that? There's no reason why, for instance, you can't mock up a motorcycle and go down the road at 185 miles an hour on a motorcycle that runs far better than any motorcycle you ever ran into that was built out of this stuff. Might run a lot better. You could probably make out a noisier one, too, oddly enough.
Wouldn't break any rods, either.
That's right. You could probably make a noisier one. Oddly enough, you could probably make a far noisier one than people would tolerate in your neighborhood. Of course, that's not in the bargain, not in the contract here. We could teach you all how to be noisy ghosts and clank chains. But we can. That's a real trick. You just mock up the sound waves. How do sound waves mock up? Well, you have to know what they look like. Well, how do you find out what they look like? Well, you look at them, of course. Now, the motto in this first unit was, don't think about it, look at it. Second unit, too. Look, don't think. Look. You find out every time you make a mistake around, it'll be because you didn't look. Every time you made a mistake with machinery, equipment, busted something of the sort, because you didn't look at it. You should have looked at it. You know, just get back and say, I am now looking at it. And then let a machine look at it for you. Such as... The body, for instance, is an automatic seeing-eye dog. And you know how you actually see with a body? You drop a little gold plate over the front of each eye. You know how you hear with it? You drop a little hearing point over each eardrum. Real cute. You know how you feel with it? You drop a feeling point over each fingertip and along each nerve course. And then you forget that you dropped them there, and your eyesight deteriorates, and you try to beat up the messed eyes in order to see better. And what's pushed them in is the anchor points, which you've got tied in there too tight. Now you say to somebody, why don't your eyes get better all the time? And the fellow goes on trying to adjust his body's eyes. And up to the time when you finally work him on a drill and where you mock up a couple of eyes, a couple of viewpoints, a little disc, and you mock up a couple of viewpoints and send them here and then mock up an optic nerve from the viewpoint to where he is and let him look into the end of the optic nerve and he sees the viewpoint, he says, what do you know? And then having put a couple out here on his nose or a couple on his ears and look with those simultaneously down an optic nerve and around the corner, so on the other side of a barrier, and he looks down these things and he looks through these, and gee whiz, he's looking out of each ear. And he's seeing a lot better than he ever saw with messed eyes. Why, he gets sort of, so what the devil am I doing? So at last he will take a look at what he's looking with. And it'll be a couple of these discs. Only they're all twisted around and all upset and all wedged and driven in some fashion or another so that he doesn't see well with them anymore because he's not taking any responsibility for them anymore. He's letting them all run automatic. When perception is done automatically, it deteriorates. When perception has deteriorated, it's been done too long automatically. That isn't, though, letting the body see for you. The body never did see for you. It never will. It's just a system that is utilized, and you know where to place these anchor points because it's made out of mess. So you put your viewpoints on the front of the eyes and go on looking through them. That's funny, isn't it? Once in a while, somebody has, the body puts one on a knee or something of the sort. And a preclear will have an interesting time. He's running around the body looking at her, and all of a sudden he's looking at the room. He's found one of the GE's viewpoints. It's real cute. Real messed up when it comes to straightening out perception without hitting automaticity. A process I want you to pay attention to is to just diagnose what kind of a machine is interrupting beingness. See? Just interrupting this beingness. What kind of a machine is it that keeps a person from turning on a sexual sensation in the law? Simple. Now you can remedy that simply by running a gradient scale and keying out the machine. You can run it by creating, just getting the preclear to do it, you know, gradient scale, until he can do it. Next, creating and destroying such a machine. Next, creating and destroying it in brackets. Next, and probably best for you, wasting, accepting, saving, desiring, and being curious about, in brackets, bracket of five, such machines. Hang, out they go. Boy, they're the easiest destroyed things you ever saw in your life. Now, light wiping out occlusion without treating the machines that make occlusion makes a rough go for a preclear. I showed you that this morning processing. Put the blackness on things. That's making the preclear do it. We're bucking right straight into the teeth of all automaticity with this process of putting emotion in mist. Right into the teeth of it. It's time now that you put it in the mist in brackets. with emotion and all the things I've given you in the mess in brackets, and where somebody is clearly bogged by the group involved and so on, should simply get him to waste the proper kind of a machine to square it up. And let's take out these reluctant pieces of machinery, the reluctant dragons, and give them a yo-heave. Got it now? I want you to do that the rest of this afternoon and this evening.